Hello, and welcome to our special series of Green Elephant interviews during March 2021, supporting the annual B Corps month. B Corporations, or B Corps for short, are businesses that meet the highest standards of verified social and environmental performance, public transparency, and legal accountability to balance profit and purpose. Throughout March, we are chatting with key people in companies which have chosen to certify as B Corps and become a force for good. Perfect. So today I have been joined by Jacinta Gunasekaram and Miranda Hitchens from Dignity New Zealand. Dignity provide period products to those who might not have access. They've been a certified B Corporation for, I think, 4 years. Is that right?
I think two,
yeah.
Okay. You've got 3 years of impact reports. But anyway, that's even better.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show, Jacinta and Miranda. How are you this morning, this evening?
Yeah, good, thanks. Summer over here, so I can't complain.
Oh, great. It's absolutely horrible in the UK at the moment. The weather has been dreadful. But anyway, first a question for Jacinta, really. I was doing a bit of background reading and then I had a look at your LinkedIn profile and it says, Jacinta is an impatient, impact-driven social entrepreneur. And I was really interested because impact-driven social entrepreneur, that's great. I think a lot of us like to think that we in the B Corp movement are like that. The impatience piece was the bit I was interested in. Talk to us about your impatience.
I think Miranda could attest to this as well, but I've been very, very well known, especially with my family, that I have no patience to wait for things to happen. I want to see them get done. And have a plan. Would you say that I'm a bit impatient?
Yeah, but I think it's a really good thing. It means that stuff happens. Like, stuff never goes through with government. So, like, the fact that, you know, you got a law passed in, what, a year and a half is amazing.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So you say you got a law passed. So there was a law passed in New Zealand to, what law was that? And what was your role in it?
Yeah, so I led a collaborative campaign with the period industry to have free period products for students in New Zealand, very similar to how UK, Wales and Scotland did that, and nothing was happening here, and I was sort of waiting, and then the opportunity came up to start a petition, bring people together and force that change, and now that has come through and there's budget secured for the next 3 years. I think we're lucky in New Zealand that it is small and very interconnected, so you can make things happen. It is part of my nature of making things happen and not taking excuses and just having a plan.
That's amazing. And Miranda, what's that like to work with?
No, it's good. It means that stuff happens. You can't be scared of failure in the same way because you just have to keep on going and pushing through. So it's good because I'm quite risk averse, so it's nice. It's a nice balance.
Good to have the balance.
Yeah.
So, in terms of your B Corp status, I mean, you said you've been a B Corp for a couple of years, but you've been doing an impact report for a little bit longer than that. And I noticed the company was only founded 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago. So you've gone quite quickly from starting to becoming a B Corp. Most B Corps, it takes them a while to kind of find their way into that. So was there a kind of a reason behind that, or what was the story behind, you know, becoming a B Corp so quickly in your history?
Yeah, well, social impact is the reason that we started. So we became a business because we wanted to solve a social problem. And so once we kind of got past our first startup period, so the first 2 years, we were already doing impact reporting. We already offset our carbon. We essentially were an impact business, and we wanted to, and we're at the stage where we wanted to be taken credibly. And so we saw that B Corp was the way to do it. Mm. And saw lots of international businesses had done it, and some of the businesses here that we looked up to in New Zealand. So it felt like a natural step for us.
Yeah. So you're already essentially a B Corp at heart. You just didn't have the stamp and the badge and thought you would do that.
Okay. I think we wanted, it was a bit of a challenge too, to actually test, like, you know, we are saying that we're this, you know, impact business. How about when we actually have a test or actually an accreditation to measure ourselves against, to actually see if we are what we're telling people.
Yeah. So it's like somebody else has said that you're an impact business. Not, it's not just you saying it, is
yeah.
it? It's,
yeah.
It's that external third party. So, so you started an impact business and you've explained why you became a B Corp. What do you think it brings to Dignity being a B Corp? What is it that it gives you that you wouldn't have if you weren't?
I think it gives us a lot of credibility. Like, it, as we said, everyone will be able to know. Lots of people know what the B Corp is.
Mm.
And so it shows that we are legitimate in what we do,
yeah.
particularly organizations that have started to embark on it themselves. And a lot of the a lot of our customers were on that journey or wanted to be on that journey. And so it worked well for us in that sense. Yeah.
Mm. And in New Zealand, because we don't have a legal status for an impact business, it was a way for us to showcase who we are in a very certified way.
Yeah.
That is public, that is well recognized, and that was it was a real challenge, and that we had to really go through all the different steps to complete the whole process.
Yeah. And so you mentioned it was a challenge. Did you find that obviously all B Corps, for listeners that don't know, have to go through an assessment process, and you have to fill in quite a detailed assessment form, and then you have an assessor comes and looks at that, and you come out with a score, and hopefully your score is over 80. And did you find that you came out the right side of 80 when you started, or did you have lots of work to do to get yourselves there? Or
we definitely got there, but I think being a small business, and there were a lot of things we were doing but not necessarily codified or written down, or so there were a lot of things, and it was a really good way for us to actually cement those practices in the business, especially going forward if we weren't going to be full-time involved, that there are now those codified rules, I guess, that are very part about impact business. So there are a few things, and the B Corp team were really friendly and really nice because we are a small initiative.
They're helpful, so, yes.
Yeah, and not necessarily an easy impact model to just put into a box.
No. Yeah, because it was the buy one, give one that we had to work through because our model was based on customer purchasing sanitary items for their staff, as well as the equivalent for people without access. Because we are facilitating that, it was trying to figure out how we owned that impact in relation with our customers too. So it was good to go through that and be sure that is a great way to develop them.
So coming on to the Dignity service, how does your service work? Because I think from what I could read, there are a couple of different aspects to the way it works. So just want to talk us through the service and how it works.
Yeah. So when we first started, so it was based on that buy one, give one model with corporate. So we saw that there were news reports out at the time. I think this was in 2017 start? Or was it 2018? 2016.
Mm.
Oh,
wow.
So late.
Time flies.
I know. There was early news reports about students not going to school because they didn't have access to period products. And so we wanted to try and develop a solution to that and trialed a few different ideas. And what really stuck was this buy one, give one model, because it was, as we said, businesses would purchase period products for their staff as well as people without access. And that we found to be a really sustainable way to keep the impact flowing, to make sure that we weren't just doing one-off donations for schools and then drying up in supply, but being able to continue to give to them.
Mm.
And so so we started with that model, and we had that for the last, we had that for the majority of the time until last year.
So just to be clear on the buy one, give one, the way that works is that an organisation will buy a number of period products for their staff and at the same time buy the same amount, which will then, I guess you manage that for them. They don't actually buy it and receive it, and but you you give away an equivalent number of products to whoever you think is in need of them.
So we've got a team package of 10 boxes. The workplace gets that. We've got really nice display units, so they're in the bathroom for the staff, and then we will send the 10 boxes to groups that we support in the community.
So we view it, so there's kind of two issues being solved here. So there's period poverty, which is where people directly can't afford products and they need them. And then there's period equity, which is about the kind of gendered financial and emotional burden of having a period. So around the extra cost and emotional labor it is to like have products on you at all times and things.
I mean, it's a surprising thing. And I guess I was aware of this, but I guess lots of people won't be, is that there is a such thing as period poverty in, you know, developed westernized countries that you wouldn't have thought this existed, really. I mean, how bad is that problem? How widespread is it?
It's it's really significant. So when we first started, we, you know, we'd just seen these news reports and we weren't sure how real it was. So we went and talked to schools and we found that not only was it real, but it was really quite prevalent. And so basically we test with schools, we get them to communicate with their students to see what is required, and then we give based on that. And we have found that the products are used and they're needed, and we've reported that people have felt increased feelings of confidence having products. We also found that staff were buying them out of their own pocket. And so we've been able to help stop that. We found that students were able to participate in sport and absenteeism reduced. So there are all these
layers
that it was real and it was there. So so that was a shock to us because it hadn't really been around. And I think because of the stigma behind it, society in general hasn't in the last 10 years.
And so obviously I'm of the male sex, and what would you, and we tend to be, this is a very broad generalization, but we tend to be in those, you know, if you look at boards of directors in larger companies, they tend to be white male dominated, and obviously a lot of the financial decisions and things are white male dominated. And what would you say to that kind of group that they need to be aware of and they need to know about this issue? Because I think that's, you know, it strikes me as that's, you know, a problem is that the awareness in that group who make these kind of decisions isn't where it needs to be.
I think, and that's the way we communicate about period products, is they are a necessity. They are like an office consumable. They are as needed as toilet paper and hand towels. That it's something that you need. So providing that, whether it's for your staff or if it's for those that are experiencing period poverty, allows them to have that confidence, to not feel that shame, to not make shift products, because they are expensive, and then also people get caught short.
And you know, that's something, again, as a man, and you mentioned that, Miranda, about, you know, having to always have something on you and always be aware and stuff. It just is outside of our experience to that issue, and so therefore it's not something you ever think of. So it is difficult from, you know, and going back to making these decisions, making the choice to do buy one give one, making that into a, well, it's, you know, mandatory like buying your other things. I think, you know, for me, it seems obvious, but I'm not sure it would seem obvious to everybody making those decisions. Have you? So when you've had these conversations, have the people you've spoken to just said, yeah, of course, that's obvious, we'll do that? Or has it been challenging in sort of trying to, you know, get to where you want to be?
I think there's two camps. I think there's people that really get it, really, really, really get it. And so we don't actually need to do much convincing. It's actually more a logistics conversation. You know, we were really nervous when Zero, who was our second customer, we had a meeting booked with them and we were ready to have all these
you know, propositions and why it was important. And the first question she asked was, okay, how big are the boxes for the bathrooms? She was already convinced. So I think a lot of people already understand that this is a no-brainer to provide in a workplace and a well-being sense. There are some people that don't get it, and then if they don't, you're actually going to really struggle to convince them otherwise until there's that tipping point. You know, we've got 40 organizations around New Zealand, like Xero, ANZ, banks, law firms, etc., providing these because they believe in our mission and their values aligned. And some of those are B Corps. So I think that's what we would prefer, is that people believe in our mission, because it's not just about providing the products, it's actually believing in our whole ethos.
And I think we've definitely, because we've been around 4.5 years, it's changed too. When we first started, it was quite a novel concept. And when we first were developing this idea, not everyone got it. It's definitely become more mainstream. There are lots of organizations now providing, you know, pad and tampons in the bathroom with us, but then also just doing it off your own back too, which is really cool. So, and it's part of the gender tech accreditation, which is like a business. So that's, which also shows it's becoming mainstream.
Great. They're not coming to get you, are they? There's a police siren in the background.
It's
great. It's better than the usual dog. You mentioned a couple of names of Xero and ANZ, and you've got lots of partner organizations listed on your website. Are they organizations that are taking your service and are using your service, or are they partnering in a different way?
They're all the buy one, give one partners.
Okay, so that they're partnering to the effect that they are helping you and they are helping pass on products to you know, people that might need it. Okay, is there a kind of a hot topic in, because you know, whatever area of sustainability or impact or whatever you're in, there tends to be a hot topic of the moment, whether you're in ocean conservation and the topic of the moment is the coral reefs, or you're in, you know, zero waste and the topic of the moment is, you know, plastic recycling. Is there something which is a hot topic and that you're working on and that you're looking for, you know, help on at the moment? Is there something, you know, that's current?
Yeah, I was wondering around the choice side of things. I think more from our side is around choice. That is a really big cornerstone of dignity in general. And I think even with this new government announcement that there's going to be free pads and tampons for students, that question of choice comes up again, and especially sustainability. So with us from early on, we decided that we would go with a provider that had organic biodegradable products. So that we could, you know, not make sure that we're helping people, but also not harming the planet at the same time.
And
so we provide that full range of products. Then our suppliers introduced the menstrual cup, so we introduced that. And then last year we partnered with our period underwear to include the underwear. So we've got the full range of products. They're all sustainable options, but it's about everybody having a choice for what suits them. But I think in the period industry, there are a lot of thoughts around, you know, maybe one should be preferred over the other, or we should all go towards one. So I think that's always a hot topic. Would you say so?
Yeah, totally. And I think there's this idea that menstrual cups are the silver bullet for, one, solving period inequity, and reducing the waste associated with period. And menstrual cups are so awesome for people that can use them, but they're not best suited to everyone.
They don't suit everyone.
From a physical perspective, especially if it's younger people that are using it, and also a sanitation perspective, it's a lot more difficult to manage. And so it's trying to find sustainable solutions that aren't just that.
Yeah. And I think, do you have an issue finding sustainable solutions that are truly sustainable? Because, you know, I was having a conversation last week with somebody that said they had a biodegradable plastic carrier bag. and they'd had it in a jar of seawater for 8 years, and it was still there, and it hadn't degraded at all. So they've been told it was, you know, I know that, but I think, you know, we see it a lot, don't we, where products are meant to be biodegradable or compostable or organic or whatever, and then actually when you come to look for them and source them, we've had this trying to source products, is that finding ones that truly are is a challenge. I don't know if you have any issues in that space.
I mean there's no silver bullet solution in general that does the job well and has no impact, but I think we've got a good balance with having so we've got the pads and tampons that we supply are made out of just cotton instead of being plastic like the majority of other suppliers are. And so we know that because it's cotton, it breaks down in after use. Breaks down in 5 years, which is still a long time, and that's still
It's not 500 years.
Absolutely. It's not perfect, but it's
But I think we get lost in the idea of perfection, particularly in the state sustainability movement. We're all seeking perfect, and actually imperfect is pretty good sometimes compared to where we are. So, so back on the B Corp thing, as a B Corp, we have to constantly recertify and prove that we're continuing to do the right thing. You have recertified. When does yours come up? And then are there any challenges?
It was recently that we recertified.
Okay.
And we'll have to do it again.
And how was the process? Was it straightforward for you, recertifying?
I think it was fine this year. We've got a general manager, which is amazing. Both of our, Miranda and I have full-time jobs and do Dignity part-time as directors. So our general manager might have had to do a bit of the back and forth. But I think we did really well in our first round, and not much has changed from previously. So I believe that it was all right. Maybe we'll have a bit more to do next year.
And was there anything, because when you do the assessment, there are, you know, there are many areas where you think we could do more in that area, we could do more in this area. Were there any areas in particular you thought, this is a focus, we'd like to improve where we are in our community or our governance or whatever? Any of those that you particularly identified, or not?
I don't know if it was related directly to the B Corp, but more diversity within our team probably could be better. Working on that.
That's absolutely one we identified, was diversity, and I think it really depends on where in the world you are. If you're not in the middle of a big multicultural city, it's very difficult to sometimes get the diversity you might want. So we ask all of our guests to give us a recommendation of a book or a resource, a film, something they think that the listeners might find useful. So was there anything you'd like to recommend for the listeners?
I was actually just having a thing. Women Don't Owe You Pretty, the one that you lent me.
Yeah,
that was a really interesting book. Which was around women, living the life that they want to live and having confidence and, setting good boundaries and owning up to, it was just a general good book in terms of being a working woman and trying to figure out how to do the right thing.
Well, we'll get a link to that and we'll put it in the show page. Jacinta, was there anything you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I mean, and that's quite inspired by the Slumflower book. I believe it's How to Get Over a Boy. I think it's called, and that's a really good read as well. The one that came to my mind was Shona Rhimes, her Year of Yes.
Oh yeah.
And okay. Shona Rhimes is an absolute powerhouse in herself. The Grey's Anatomy creator, the Bridgerton creator as well on Netflix. It's just got this beautiful book, which is a really personal journey in her writing, and is incredible. And I think also because she's such a powerful person, actually understanding a bit of her own personal journey was really amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Well, we'll We'll put links out to those for our listeners. And finally, before we get on to our bit of fun with our fact or fake, if people want to find out more, to, you know, get involved, what's the best way for them to get hold of you? Is it via your website, or do you hang out on LinkedIn, or?
We are on LinkedIn, so we're dignitynz.com for our website. If you search Dignity space NZ on LinkedIn, we're there. We're underscore DignityNZ on Instagram, DignityNZ on Twitter.
Yeah. We're on Facebook. So a number of different places they can get hold of you. Yeah,
You'll find.
Maybe not TikTok, but.
Anything but TikTok. Okay, great. We'll put links to all those on the show page. We won't link to TikTok, and great, and people be able to get hold of you. So normally my favourite time of these shows, but I'm not quite sure today because Miranda and Jacinta have very kindly prepared something. So I'm waiting to see what they've prepared for me. So over to you, really.
Can you read that?
Okay, do you want to do
do you want to start with that one?
Okay.
So you have to say whether it's fact or false.
A fact or a fake.
Of ours are very period questions, so we're all going to learn for that.
Maybe it's the same ones I researched, and in which case I'll know them up front.
then you'll know. Okay, yeah. Number one, do you have to boil a menstrual cup after use?
Of all the things I thought I'd be asked at 5:30 on a Monday morning, that was not on the list, I'll be honest.
Starting strong.
I'm going to say that is a fake. I would have said that makes it a bit. Does that increase the difficulty of use and make it a bit of a... I'm going to say it's a fake.
No, sorry. You do have to do it. Not each show, though, right?
At the end of your cycle. At the end of your cycle,
And it's for sanitation, and then it's fine to use afterwards.
Okay. So that's one to you, then.
Okay, so the next one. So this is in New Zealand dollars, so you may just have to mentally convert it.
Yep.
So it costs a person $5,000. Having a period costs a person $5,000 over their life.
Ooh. $5,000. Yeah, now I'm thinking that.
£10,000?
No, is it the other way? Over there? That's the other way, $2,500. Because his was with double wires, I think.
Oh, okay.
£2,500.
Well, I did some research on the number of products they might use over their lifetime. So that sounds possible, if a tiny bit low, maybe. I'm thinking that might be a fake. I think it might be a little bit more than that.
Yeah, it is a fake. You're correct. It's actually $15,000. So it's...
Wow.
By three, might be that New Zealand has higher costs for period products, but interesting.
Your question number three is, you can compost your organic cotton pads and tampons.
Well, that's if they are truly organic, surely you can. I'd say that's a fact.
Yep, correct.
It's got to be, isn't it? Great.
Correct.
And as I prepared them, I might as well use it. Well, so I think, what was that, 2-1 to me? As I prepared them, we might as well use mine and go for a bumper. So the ones that I came up with were for you. Period product manufacturers do not legally have to share their ingredients. Is that a fact or a fake?
That's a fact.
That's definitely a fact.
Do you reckon?
I reckon it's a fact. Which is terrible. That should be illegal, but I reckon it's a fact.
Yeah, it is a fact. So there's any number of materials and chemicals that go into period products, and obviously that are getting into the bloodstream, and manufacturers don't have to share the ingredients. That is, I found that one absolutely frightening.
There's been a new brand in New Zealand that says they're organic, but only a percentage of their product is organic.
Yeah, they say organic when it's, you know, 10% organic, and they still put organic all over the box.
Yeah,
that sort of thing drives me nuts. But anyway, so my next one was similar to your question on cost. Was the average woman will use, I said, 8,000 disposable period products in their lifetime. Is that a fact or a fake?
I said it's a fact.
Yeah, fact. I'd say it's a fact.
It's actually, it was 15,000. So it was,
it
was similar to your cost then. And finally, the last one I have was 1 in 10 girls aged 14 to 21 can't afford menstrual products.
There's more than that. It has to be more than that.
That was a pretty good study, though, that came out.
Yeah, what was in that? It was, I wrote it down somewhere.
Actually.
Is that cheating? Oh. I wrote it in my book.
That's fine. If you've come prepared, that's absolutely fine.
I think it was slightly higher. I think it was like 14%.
I think it's more than that.
But maybe it's probably 2. But that's also New Zealand specific. I don't know.
This study was really good, but I reckon it's more.
Okay.
So I'm calling false. You say false?
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's 3 in 10. So yeah, it was a little bit more than that. Brilliant. Jacinta, Miranda, that's been an absolute pleasure, an absolute joy. It's been eye-opening for me. I've learned things this morning. I hope that the listeners will have learned things this morning. And it's been absolutely great to speak to you. And I wish you all the best of luck with your campaign and with your continued B Corp journey.
Thank you.
We really hope that you found this special B Corp Month episode both informative and entertaining. Make sure you don't miss any of the other 31 interviews with B Corporations who are striving to be a force for good. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing. And don't forget to spread the word with others. If you have any questions about being or becoming a B Corp, or any comments and suggestions about the show, please do get in touch. You can email studio@greenelephant.show or visit our website greenelephant.show. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube or Twitter by searching for Green Elipod or The Green Elephant Show. You can also review the show on Google and Apple Podcasts. Join us tomorrow, and we hope you have a sustainable day.